Hello. Welcome to the show called The Environment. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We're going to be reading articles from the Sierra Magazine, the Fall 2024 edition. This first one is called Help Wanted. Essentials. Electricians are essential to a renewable energy future. This article was written by Gabe Castro Root. Jed Pulsifer never expected to be on the front lines of the energy transition. In 2018, ready to switch careers after nearly a decade in retail, he enrolled in trade school and got his HVAC certification so he could begin working on heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. New credentials in hand, he landed a job at Revision Energy, which is an employee-owned renewable energy company in New England, where he also enrolled in an electrician apprenticeship program. And after that, Pulsifer was hooked. He now manages Revision's team of nearly 40 electricians in South Portland, Maine. He said, "It's extremely gratifying being able to build a project, install something, turn it on, and know that it's going to have a positive impact on someone's life and their home. Getting the opportunity to effectively make someone's home completely independent from fossil fuels is really satisfying." In order to meet the decarbonization goals set by the Biden-Harris administration and many states, the country will need a lot more skilled tradespeople like Pulsifer. The scale and scope of what's needed to electrify everything means people who work in the skilled trades, from electricians to HVAC technicians, are in higher demand than ever. But there's just one problem. There doesn't seem to be enough of them. Anna Veronica Burke, a solar installation instructor at Grid Alternatives in Sacramento, California, said, "I'm excited because it means my job matters more. At the same time, I'm also like, do we have the time? Are we going to be able to hit all the deadlines that are required in order to electrify the world?" There were more than 760,000 electricians working across the United States in 2022, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The number of electrician jobs is expected to grow by 6% between 2022 and 2032. That's double the average growth rate for all occupations. Hiring will need to ramp up to keep pace. Electricians report being fully booked, their schedules filling up months in advance, and even turning away potential clients. The lack of workers can lead to delays in service that leave those greenhouse gas-emitting appliances in use longer than they otherwise would be. The federal government projects 73,500 openings for electrician jobs annually, many of them to replace workers who are retiring or leaving the industry. Alexandria Hare, a senior research associate at Rewiring America, who studies the electrification workforce, said the best way to fill that gap is to increase the number of apprenticeship programs. Labor groups and trade associations like the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, or the Independent Electrical Contractors, or the Associated Builders and Contractors, they all have multi-year programs. But, Hare said, these are highly competitive and that the country needs more apprenticeships in high schools and community colleges so that these opportunities are more widely publicized. She said, quote, "There are people who want to enter registered apprenticeship programs. It's about making them more available, making sure all of these jobs have high wages and family-sustaining benefits, and also making sure people know how to enter these programs," unquote. Ramping up electrification, she added, is not necessarily just a demand problem. In addition to their roles in construction and maintenance, Contractors are messengers. If a contractor comes to your house and says you should reinstall the gas heater you already have, and they don't recommend a heat pump, you are more likely to just reinstall that thing that you already have, which we really can't afford to be doing anymore, she said. One study commissioned by HVAC manufacturer Midea found that after learning about heat pumps, 87% of contractors said they would be more likely to install one in their own home. Rewiring America works with contractors to spread the word about the benefits of electrification among their peers. But, Hare said, much more outreach is needed. The climate impact of electrical work is front of mind at some training centers. Burke, who studied environmental science at the University of San Francisco before pivoting to solar installation, said, "Essentially every lecture, there's at least several slides that encompass climate change." Now, trainees in Burke's program at Grid Alternatives participate in activities from day one that expand their knowledge of climate change and how it has impacted their lives. Some electricians are drawn to the job specifically because of the role that it plays in cutting emissions. Nathaniel Johnson is one of them. He found his calling for a second career as an electrician during the pandemic while working as a journalist for the environmental news site Grist. Johnson, who lives in Berkeley, California, said, "I'd been writing about this concept of electrifying everything, and this idea that I could actually put my hands to work was really compelling after just talking and talking and talking about it." Johnson left journalism in January 2022 to focus on his electrical apprenticeship, and he hopes to be certified by the end of this year. He said, "There's an unimaginably huge pile of work to get done. It is definitely a drag on the energy transition that there are not enough electricians right now. The need for them is ballooning." And that was the article entitled "Help Wanted," written by Gabe Castro Root. Our next article is entitled "Silent Revolution," and the subtitle is "The End of the Diesel Truck Age Begins at Southern California's Ports." This was an article written by Judith Lewis Murnett. The charging yard for electric trucks at the Port of Long Beach is bright and sunny and full of semi-trailer tractors, the truncated front ends of big rigs without their big box loads. It's also quiet. Everywhere at the port, wherever there are trucks, there is the near-deafening rumble of diesel engines. But the trucks here are not combusting. They are filling up with electrons to power their next trip to Southern California's Inland Empire, the constellation of cities to the east and the largest concentration of warehouses in the world. To Luis Cardona, a port trucker for the past 10 years, that silence is the best part of driving an electric truck. The diesel engine roar goes on pretty much all day because port trucking, which is also known as drayage, is mostly about waiting for entry through the port's security gates, for loads to be lowered down by towering gantry cranes from massive container ships, for traffic to move on permanently congested Southern California roads. Cardona said, "If you turn the engine off, it always gets really hot. So it's a choice between sweltering and enduring a noise that can exceed 100 decibels, which is 10 points higher than the legal limit for workplaces." If California did not have grand climate ambitions, Cardona would be stuck with a noisy diesel. But he now has a choice of what to drive, because state regulators decreed that by 2035, only zero-emission trucks will be allowed to work the state's seaports. That regulation is key to California's attempts to cut its carbon pollution. Nationally, transportation accounts for nearly one-third of carbon emissions, and heavy-duty trucking is responsible for a quarter of that, adding more than 400 million metric tons of greenhouse gases to the Earth's atmosphere every year. Trucks emit more locally damaging pollutants as well, like particulate matter from their diesel engines, which infiltrates human lungs and causes a host of ailments for people in port communities. Decarbonizing freight matters more than just about anything else in the fight to stabilize the climate and protect human health. Current electric big rigs are a move in the right direction, but they're far from perfect. Their range is limited, and their batteries are heavy. Cardona says, as a driver, you can feel the weight. Managing that battery usage, well, as Cardona said, it takes up a lot of headspace. Driving uphill and accelerating burns through the truck's charge in a hurry, he has learned to use a light foot on the accelerator and maximize coasting. Just like electric cars, electric trucks have regenerative braking, so slowing and braking recharges the battery. When Cardona got to the Long Beach charging yard earlier in the day, he had just completed a 164-mile round trip to a warehouse and back. When he started out, the vehicle claimed that it had 289 miles of range. But when he got back, it said he only had 28 miles left. And there's a reason the truckers call the onboard range estimators guesstimators. Cardona said, I compare it to a phone. Your phone says you've got tons of battery life until you start watching videos. Well, such problems would be moot if batteries had more capacity and were lighter, as manufacturers say they will be in the future. Also, Cardona says, we need more chargers. The charging ecosystem, quote, needs to be more like Tesla's, where you have places to charge everywhere, unquote. Well, Salem Yusefsta says, we're working on that for you guys. His charging station, actually because Yusefsta is the CEO of Watt EV, the company that leased the land and installed the chargers, Yusefsta has a vision for the future in which drivers like Cardona will be able to drive 500 miles, pull over, and charge in 10 minutes, and then be back on the road, just as quick as a diesel fill-up. Trucks with battery packs that can handle such charging speeds have yet to be made, but Watt EV's new charging yard in Bakersfield, California, already has the first operational megawatt charger in the country. Powered with solar panels and battery storage, it could fill a battery with 300 miles of range in the time it takes for a trucker to use the restroom and eat lunch. Now, Yusefsta admits, quote, there's still no truck that can use it, unquote, but he is certain that one will come on the market soon, even if his company has to commission it. Now, Watt EV was a COVID baby, founded in late summer 2020, just as California Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order requiring that within 15 years, all new passenger cars and trucks sold in state have to be zero emission. Medium and heavy-duty vehicles had until 2045 to attain zero emission status, but drayage trucks, they would follow the same schedule as any new passenger car and truck. And that got trucking company CEOs looking into the feasibility and affordability of battery electric trucks, and it opened the door to Watt EV. Yusefsta was only 31 at the time and had already abandoned a couple of early experiments in the clean energy field. He said, quote, the mission was to accelerate the transition. At the time, we wanted to be the leading charging infrastructure providers, but we very quickly realized that it's half the battle, unquote. If you don't have the trucks, chargers sit idle. If you don't have the chargers, you can't move the trucks. He realized that Watt EV needed to do it all, provide the charging yards, brand, and offer trucks as a service, and even connect, or in some cases, generate the power. He said, we have developed, over time, to be competitively vertically integrated. We do everything but manufacture the trucks. So in May, Watt EV added 180 new battery electric trucks to the 36 it already had in its fleet, making it a medium-sized trucking company as well as a builder of charging networks. The idea, the CEO said, is to offer trucks as a service. A trucker could pull in with a rundown battery and climb into a freshly charged truck in just minutes, eliminating the charging downtime that everyone fears. Yusefzada has a hard time getting utilities to take him seriously when he first described the power demands of truck charging. Watt EV was a, quote, startup with zero credit, saying, we want 10 megawatts. Well, that's a substantial ask. 10 megawatts is enough to run 2,500 homes. Watt EV now has four such sites, in addition to those in Bakersfield and Long Beach. That includes one in San Bernardino, an inland empire city with nearly 37 contiguous square miles of warehouses. Eventually, the company plans to build charging infrastructure everywhere from Otay Mesa on the U.S.-Mexico border to Puyallup, Washington, wherever a Pacific Coast truck driver might need to rest and charge up. Now, if you're looking to see how the transition from diesel to zero-emission trucks is taking shape, the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are where it's happening. Together, they are known as the San Pedro Bay Port Complex, the busiest port in the Western Hemisphere and the 10th busiest in the world. It processes $500 billion in goods every year, one-third of all U.S. trade that moves through seaports in containers. In 2021, when consumers were shopping online in record numbers, the Port of Los Angeles alone brought in nearly $300 billion in cargo. The price of that banner year, however, was a 56% increase in particulate matter emissions and a 40% rise in greenhouse gas emissions. It wasn't just from trucks. At one point in November 2021, 114 ships were backed up in the harbor, all chuffing bunker fuel, soot, and smoke. They've since been banned from idling closer than 150 miles from shore. But trucks are the primary reason why San Pedro Bay port communities, heavily working class and Latino, suffer the worst diesel particulate matter pollution in the state. And that's why environmental groups working on behalf of those communities sued the Port of Los Angeles in 2001 to stop a planned expansion. The settlement they reached 2 years later included $50 million to mitigate the impacts of port operations. That money funded a transition to less polluting yard equipment and shoreside electric power for container vessels, the first for any U.S. shipping terminal, thus reducing air pollution from each ship by a ton per day. Los Angeles's sister port in Long Beach now bills itself as the Green Port, with its equipment and ships at berth mostly humming along on electricity instead of idling on bunker fuel, which is the dirtiest of dirty fuels. The port feels as though it were built as a model for the future, and clean trucks are the last key piece of its green puzzle. Well, like many transitions, from waking to sleeping, from wealth to poverty, from democracy to fascism, the switch from dirty to clean in the trucking business happened very slowly, and then all at once. California has long required diesel truck manufacturers to provide cleaner models for the state's market, an effort that was ramped up in 2006 with the port's Clean Air Action Plan. In 2008, the San Pedro Bay ports banned all pre-1989 trucks and required all trucks to meet the 2007 emission standards by the year 2012. And those two actions alone cut diesel particulate matter and nitrogen oxides, which is the primary component of smog, they cut it by 90%. But it wasn't enough. Emissions from the ports in general were still stifling the state's long-standing efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 40% or more below 1990 levels, and diesel soot still poisoned the air in local communities. In 2017, the ports updated their Clean Air Action Plan for a second time to reflect the widening availability of zero-emission technology and began requiring it across all sectors, ships at berth, the yard equipment used to move and stack containers, trucks of all sizes, and anything else that pollutes the air at the ports. And finally, in 2023, came the rule from California's Air Resources Board requiring port trucks to go zero emission by 2035. It was not well received by the trucking industry, according to Matt Schrapp, who is CEO of the Harbor Trucking Association. That's an industry advocacy group. He admits that trucking companies have known they have to move toward cleaner trucks. He insists, quote, "They see the writing on the wall, but it's too soon to start banning diesel drayage trucks." He went on and said, "Even with the incentive money that's out there, these zero-emission trucks are extremely expensive. A new battery electric big rig can cost as much as $500,000. That's three times more than a brand new diesel truck in the same category." Now, California does have a program for small trucking companies that will pay up to 90% of a truck's cost, and the 2021 Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, or law, allocated $17 billion for ports and waterways with $3 billion in grants for decarbonization projects. But there might still be costs that government grants can't cover. Schrapp says insurance goes up with the cost of the truck. Labor costs go up because of the decreased range, because companies are paying drivers to sit at a charging bay. There are potential weight penalties because batteries are heavy and trucks in California have weight limits. And when trucks have to carry less cargo to make those weight limits, those costs are passed on to the customer. Sometimes it means raising prices by 30 to 50%. Schrapp says, quote, "We're just trying to think of a rational, reasonable rollout for this. But when we're dealing with the state of California, there's not a lot of reasonableness," unquote. Well, California might be forcing the issue at the moment, but trucking companies will soon choose battery electric technology voluntarily, just to save money, according to Lisa McGee. She manages the Zero Emission Vehicle Program at Tom's Truck Center, a firm that sells trucks of all sorts to drayage fleets and other commercial operators. Now, before that, she worked for the Green Power Motor Company and the San Diego Airport Parking Company, where she transitioned entire fleets to zero-emission vehicles way back in 2015. Her experience tells her that battery electric heavy-duty trucks will soon dominate the market, simply because over time they are cheaper to operate. Electric vehicles need less maintenance, have fewer moving parts, they never need an oil change, so they have less downtime and lower fuel cost. Your operational cost per mile is half what it would be with combustion, she says. Then she went on and said, when you multiply that by 10 or 15 or 100 trucks, it's persuasive. As for labor cost, she doesn't see a problem with paying drivers an hourly wage while they charge their vehicles, because drivers need breaks anyway. Two 125-mile round trips from the ports to the warehouses leaves plenty of free time to plug in and charge up, she insists. It's like eating lunch or eating dinner, right? You say, I don't have time to do it, but you do, and I can show you where in your day you do. USESFIDA also presumes that people will choose electric trucks, so long as they have the means to charge them. He isn't counting on state and federal grants, although he has managed to secure his share of them, along with two visits to the White House to present his vision of the clean trucking industry. Watt EV has leased its EV trucks to Walmart and Procter & Gamble, quote, which is a huge source of revenue for us, unquote, that he says. Even without California's mandate, those companies, quote, have sustainability goals that they want to meet, and they're willing to have their loads moved with zero emissions if it's close to what they were already doing with diesel trucks, unquote. Well, in a way, WattEV is a corporate pilot program. Quote, they start moving freight within our network that we know works, unquote. From there, he trusts that other operators will follow suit. We like to move fast and solve problems. Well, there are problems aplenty to solve. California will need upward of 100,000 new chargers to keep the estimated 160,000 battery electric trucks running and the electricity to keep them operating. Few in the industry dispute that it can be done, but many insist it can't be done in a decade. California already requires manufacturers of vehicles to phase in zero-emission technology if they want to keep selling in the state. And in the 10 other states that have adopted California's rules. By 2028, 50% of the new vehicles sold in California need to be zero emission, and that includes heavy-duty trucks. McGee said, once we see that shift, we won't have as many choices, because you can't drive what isn't manufactured. The technology is moving forward with or without you. And that was the article, Silent Revolution, The End of the Diesel Truck Age Begins at Southern California's Ports. This story was written by Judith Lewis Murnit, M-E-R-N-I-T. And that was an article I read from the Sierra Magazine, the Fall 2024 edition. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the show called The Environment. I hope you have a great week ahead. I hope you keep on listening. Bye for now.